Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir.
And we're not experts.
No, we're not. But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Indeed, we do, Dori. And just a friendly reminder, before we get started, you can visit our website, Forever 35 Podcast, for links to everything we mention on the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Forever 35 Pod and Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast. And you may join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. And we also have a newsletter, which you can find at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. If you would like to reach us, we have a voicemail number and a text number, 781-591-0390. And you can email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
All of those things are true. Kate.
That's all of it.
That is all of it. Mm-hmm. How's it going?
You know, okay, so you know how we have talked about cold plunging on this podcast?
Oh, yes, we have talked about it many a time.
Past guest Saleka Jawad recommended it as her own self-care practice. I believe we talked about it with the hosts of Eyewitness Beauty when they were on, this idea that submerging oneself in cold water resets the nervous system and does amazing things for your mental health.
Yes.
Well, I kind of did it once.
Okay. So wait.
And it felt really good.
Hadn't you dabbled in this previously?
Okay, well, here's the thing. I dabbled in getting into a cold shower, and I hated it. I hated every second
of it.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes.
I lasted, because Annie from Eyewitness Beauty had said that she, to help with her insomnia, she gets in a cold shower and stands there for 30 minutes before bed. And I was like, oh, that's intriguing. I have trouble sleeping. And I was like, I'll try it. And I lasted 45 seconds. And then I was, you know, there was something about the fact that you just like turn on the shower. And instead of turning it to my usual like burning hot, I had to leave it at icy cold and then step into the stream of water. Oof. It was very hard to just make myself do it. But I'm currently, you know, in New Hampshire, as we have established, for the summer with family, and I am near a lake. And the other morning, I woke up at 4 a.m. I had gone to sleep at midnight. I got no sleep. I couldn't. Oof. Everything was racing, like brain racing, heart racing. I couldn't get the song Castle on the Hill by Ed Sheeran out of my head. Like, you know when a song is so in your head that you're lying there trying to fall asleep and it's literally like streaming in your head?
Oh my
gosh,
that song?
Yes. I don't know. And so finally I woke up at 4 and I tried to, you know, meditate and try to fall back asleep, and that didn't work. And at 5 a.m. I was like, well, I'm going to go swimming. So I went and I plunged into the lake. Ooh. And I went for like a very calm dip early in the morning. Now, granted, it is summer. It is a lake. It's not like it is swimmable. It's not freezing cold, but
yeah.
It was really refreshing. And I had to drive 3 hours that morning to pick my kid up at camp and then drive 3 hours back. on sleepaway 4 hours
camp,
of sleep.
To be clear, we just want
yes, yes, not day camp. I was not sending her to like an extremely far away day camp. She had been at sleepaway camp, but it was a lot of, you know, it was 6.5 hours of driving.
Yes.
On yes, 4 hours yes, of sleep, which really makes me kind of nervous. And I felt refreshed. I mean, I felt so good after the plunge, after the swim.
Yeah.
It just felt great. Not only that, but just the experience of being alone in nature that early in the morning was really magical. And so, you know, did you just do like a 20-minute moan? Is that
I
what
did.
I was just hearing? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I was just like,
You were imagining it, right? The caress of the gentle lake waters.
Yeah.
So I did it and it felt awesome. And, you know, I've been swimming a lot since, but not that kind of like early morning dip.
Yes.
I don't know what came over me. I just like dressed and walked to the shore and went for it, hoping my other kid wouldn't wake up and like not be able to find me. So that's my story.
Wow.
I enjoyed my plunge. I might try to do it again. Yeah, it was cool. And you know, it resonated with me as after having all these conversations on this show.
Yeah. Do you think you'll do it again?
Certainly. I had this like fantasy that I would be waking up early every morning and like swimming away. And that hasn't really happened, but I do think one, I do like to swim every day because it's like such a gift to get to be near the water. And
yeah,
I just feel like it's really good for my soul to swim.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as a former swimmer, and I'm not talking about like, you know, like exercise speed swimming. I mean, although it is great, you know, feels good to move my body, but just the feeling of like, I don't know, water is so meditative and calming and magical.
It really is.
It really is. And also like natural bodies of water.
Yeah.
Look, Dory, I love a lake. Lakes are freaking great. And it's taken me a long time not to be scared of the bottom of lakes. So now I'm just, I'm leaning into lakes.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
All right. So I need you to talk to me because you're in a rut.
I feel like I'm in a rut. I think I'm in that post-book launch, post-vacation, post-post-post. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I had a lot of things that I was focusing on for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm not focusing on, like, the podcast, but...
Oh, well, I see how it is, Dory.
Do you know what I mean, though? Like,
oh, 100%.
Like, kind of like big other things that were taking up. You know, when we were on vacation, we had no childcare. So I was like totally focused on Henry, like pretty much the entire time. I didn't really have time to think about anything else. And then in the weeks prior to that, I was really focused on my book launch and didn't really have time to think about other things. And now I feel like I'm just sort of like at loose ends a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. I don't know exactly what to do. Do you have ideas?
Yeah, I do. So, actually, a conversation I had with my oldest daughter who had spent a month at sleepaway camp and had never done anything like that before, and I picked her up, and I had gone to sleepaway camp as a kid, and one thing I said to her, I was like, you know, I often feel really depressed. I would feel really depressed as a kid when camp was over. It's such an intense experience, and intense in like you're experiencing homesickness, but you're also experiencing these massive friendships and that when it's over, the quiet, like you get down, you get depressed, you get into a rut. And, you know, she hasn't expressed whether or not she's going through that right now, but I just was kind of wanted to give her the heads up. And I think honestly, Dory, you just kind of have to be in it and not try to get yourself out of it. Because that to me feels like trying to climb out of a hole where the walls are covered in Vaseline. Like you just have to kind of be in the rut, do rut things, like let yourself putter around and do nothing or just veg out or feel sad.
Yeah,
I think because you have to have the lull and honor the lull and honor the feelings that are coming up in order to then transition to the next phase. Just rut. Just be in the rut. Because what's wrong with being in a rut? What does that mean? Like, what does it mean to you to be in a rut? I need to know. What does that mean? Like, what does it look like?
I think I just don't like being in such a sort of like negative headspace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I just don't like how it makes me feel.
I know.
You know? So it's more that than like feeling like I need to be productive or something. Like that's not really it. It's more just like I don't like feeling this way.
I know. I know. That is hard. That feeling of like, ugh. I don't want to have these thoughts. I don't want to have these feelings.
You know what? You know what else it is? Everything is annoying me, and everyone except for you is annoying me.
No, I might annoy you just a little bit.
You rarely annoy me.
Wow, that's an accomplishment because I know kind of annoying, honestly.
And I get annoyed easily. So
look at us, two peas in a pod here.
Yeah, like I was just, I don't know. I'm just sort of like, and I don't like feeling irritable, you know, and I don't want to get depressed because that's like depressing and hard to get out of. And
do you have a thing that like kind of lifts you up when you're feeling down? Like, is it getting outside? Is it going for a walk? Oh, I'm not in California. I don't know what you're experiencing.
It's hot and it's very sunny. So like, going outside for a walk, I mean, I could go kind of at dusk, I suppose, after Henry goes to bed. But yeah, during the day, it's not like pleasant really to go for a walk because the sun is so strong. So that's not really it. I don't know. Yoga? Question mark. Like I don't know. You know,
could you give yourself over to a book or a TV show?
Well, I mean, I'm still slogging through Outlander.
Oh yeah, just reread those sex scenes.
I was thinking like I'm on book 5. I think I need to take a break after this because it's just it's like too much. Too much. I need something lighter. And not as crisis driven. Yeah. So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at right now. Just wanted to share.
Well, okay. I appreciate you sharing. And if people have rut solutions, I'd be curious to hear them. But I'm also, I think you raise a good point.
No,
like you don't want to,
you know,
fall into a depression.
Yeah.
So how do you find the balance there?
Yeah. And I think I don't want to, I think sometimes when I feel this way, my tendency is to like blow things up, not literally, but like figuratively. And I don't want to like make a decision or say something that I'm like, oh, why did I do that? You know what I mean? I think I'm also PMSing, which is like not helping. So,
ooh, that's a fun combination.
Yeah, it's really great. It's really great. Thanks. Thanks so much.
Well, I feel like listeners must have a good suggestion on how they handle their ruts.
Right? I mean, I feel like we have given advice to people who are in ruts, but like,
I know, but it's always like so much easier said than done, right?
No, it's so hard to like take your own advice.
Oh, it's the worst. Like it never works.
So yeah, I don't know.
Well, we'll stew on it, but while we do that, we have a really wonderful interview to share with you all.
We do. We really do.
I loved every second of this conversation. And we talked a lot about the experience of being childless by choice and the way that decision is received by the larger world, as well as your own community. And it was just a really powerful and inspiring conversation.
Our guest today is Donna Freitas, And she, if you're not familiar with her, she is a Brooklyn-based author of fiction and nonfiction, as well as a memoir and novels for young adults and middle grade readers. Her newest novel is The Nine Lives of Rose Napolitano. She's also a professor and researcher on topics related to sex on campus, Title IX, and sexual assault, as well as social media and young adults. She's been a professor at Boston University and in Hofstra University's Honors College, and is currently on faculty at Fairleigh Dickinson University's MFA in Creative Writing. So we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will be talking to Donna.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave, it's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30+. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like, zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
All right. So Donna, we'll just get started. We're going to share your bio with our listeners before the interview runs before the segment. So we will just start chatting, asking questions about self-care, your book, the eternal pressure on women to have children, which I think is going to resonate with our audience very deeply. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Oh, my self-care stuff is really complicated.
Is it really? Okay. So
great.
So Donna, we love complicated self-care practices.
We do.
The more detail, like you can take a full 30 minutes if you want to describe it.
I'm complicated. Like I have, I'm self-care challenged.
Oh, okay.
So, which we can talk about.
Well, yes. Great. Let's get into it.
What is the self-care practice that takes a while? What do you do?
Well, I'd say the thing that makes, well, so I just mentioned that I feel like I'm self-care challenged. I think the thing that makes my life most complicated in this regard, like I remember when I knew I was going to talk to you guys, I know you talk about like skin stuff and like all kinds of different, you know, kinds of like body self-care. And I was one of those people who was born allergic to the world. So I'm like allergic to self-care, or like when it comes to like products. And so I'm one of these people who is, you know, I've had the same moisturizer since I was like 18. I go and I can't try anything else. You know how people give you those nice gifts sometimes where there's like body lotions and shampoos, and none of that, you know, for me. So I think I spend a lot of my life trying to hold off self-care products because I'm often allergic to them. And so I would say I do think a lot about self-care, but I feel like I have a lot of self-care rituals, but they've had to be sort of not related to my body and more like my mental health, because a lot of products I think that people use for their bodies don't work with me.
What are some of your mental health practices?
Go on.
This is a hot topic for us as well.
What, like being allergic to everything or just
mental health care is self-care, not to rhyme everything, but that is, I mean, I think one conclusion Dory and I have come to in doing this podcast for a little while now is that ultimately that is where the real beneficial self-care work lies.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear what you do on this front.
Well, so I have the sort of like tiny things, and then I have the sort of bigger things. So I'll start with the tiny things, which is, so for example, I often have a vase of flowers in my line of sight. Like I can see one right now, peonies are in season and they're my favorite. And I feel like I just feel this burst of happiness when I look at them. And so like certain flowers I'll keep like in my line of sight when I'm working. So I would say that's a small one. And then the other thing is I'm just surrounded by color. I really love bright color. Like it actually makes me feel joy. And I have like, this was like one of my favorite things. I have this, this like pink ottoman. So my husband tolerates these things, but so I and I have like an eggplant colored like gravity blanket. That's one of my self care things. I like to be bundled like a baby. So those are sort of the smaller ones, and then I think the bigger ones are, I've realized in the last few years how much walking, like just walking is a huge part of my life. Like I live in the city. I start to deteriorate when I'm not in the city. Like I'm not a car person. And I feel like, you know, actually getting up and walking to the store to buy a lemon is part of my mental health, as opposed to driving in a car to buy the lemon I forgot. And then I'd say the other thing revolves around my relationship to social media. So that's a whole range of issues. I'll stop there.
We're going to talk about social media, we would like to talk about social media later on, because, so let's circle back to your self-care social media practices, because you are an expert in the field of how social media affects our mental well-being. And, I can speak for myself when I say that is something I have struggled with nonstop since the introduction of Friendster.
I remember Friendster.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
people of a certain age will remember Friendster. Well, Donna, just out of curiosity, what is the moisturizer that you've been using since you were 18?
It's super lame. It's just the one it's like one of the only ones I'm not allergic to. It's just called Moisturel. It's like one of those ones that your dermatologist will recommend if you are allergic to everything. And there's a couple of them that they'll recommend, but that's the only one that works for me. So Moisturel, like you buy it at the drugstore.
That's okay. Perfect. I mean, you're not the only person who I'm sure has this experience with allergies to products. And also what I find interesting is that you've been using the same product since you were 18. Like you're almost like a, I don't know how to say this. Like you're like, could you be proof that products are just all BS and marketing, right? Like you've been using the same thing since you were 18. Your skin looks great. Maybe you don't need all the extra bells and whistles. Like maybe we're all trapped in a capitalism skincare frenzy.
I don't know. I mean, I always feel like it would be so fun to be able to partake of all these different things. But I mean, part of how I discovered that I could only use this one thing, or I just had to find this one thing and use it, was because I was trying to use all these other products and my body was just like not having it. And I was, you know, in this really, really miserable place. So I have eczema, like really bad eczema. And so for those of you listening who don't know what eczema is, it's like you're allergic to your own skin. And so I finally found a doctor, but also I found a roommate. I found a roommate who was like, I feel your pain. We're going to fix this. And she was sort of the person who was like, you're going to try these three moisturizers. One of them's going to work, you know, and, you know, you're going to buy a filter for your shower. You're going to like, she had me like do all of this stuff, like really basic stuff to make sure that I wasn't getting anything, you know, anything perfumed or problematic coming near my skin. And for the first time in like 3 years, within like a month, my skin was clear. Like I was just like, it was like I was a new person.
Wow.
So I will feel eternally grateful to this woman who helped me. So
that's amazing.
I know. What a powerful story of friendship. Like how we often get our information that actually does help us is from, you know, people in our lives.
She had really bad eczema. And so she was like, here's what you're, you know, she knew what to do. But I've just never veered since then. And it's, you know, the other thing, I just, you know, keep myself out of the sun. I don't like to walk in the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other big thing.
So. Yeah. Well, Donna, let's talk about your new book, The 9 Lives of Rose Napolitano. Could you share with our listeners just kind of a brief synopsis of the book?
Yes. I've been told that my synopsis is weird, or that other people would do a different synopsis, but I'll just give you my synopsis. So my synopsis is that my novel's about Rose Napolitano, and she's never wanted children, and her marriage has come to rest on whether or not she'll change her mind. And so the book follows 9 different versions of Rose, and some she has a baby and some she doesn't. And all of them, she is dealing with the pressure society puts on women to have children. And then if they do have children, about what they're doing, you know, as mothers. Mm-hmm. And also marriage, career, friendship, her own relationship with her mother. So, but, it, you know, I think the book really turns on this fight she has with her husband at the beginning of each of her lives about kids and how the outcome of that fight. So that's my synopsis.
I mean, I think you summed it up really well. I'm only about halfway through, but that feels very on point.
Yes.
I'm really enjoying it. And I would love to hear about your own, you know, as I get further into the book, I'm starting to realize that there's a lot of connections to your own life. So could you tell us where this kind of first seed of an idea came from and if it did come from personal experience?
So I mean, as a writer, I tell all my students, you know, I feel like you start with what you know, and then you sort of go from there. And I always think of when I'm writing, when I'm beginning something new, it's like I'm taking something that's mine and I'm giving it away to my characters and seeing what they do. And so I feel like I gave Rose this dilemma and I got to watch her, you know, explore it in 9 different ways. And she really lives out the fantasies and fears that I had when I was struggling with this issue. And so I was in a situation, you know, in my marriage where I went into my marriage, like saying like, I'm not going to change my mind. I'm not having kids. I'm not going to change my mind. You can't go into this marriage thinking I'm going to change my mind. Like, please don't think I'm going to come around. And then my husband, a few years into the marriage, changed his mind and tried to get me to change mine. And it was really hard. So Rose was really born eventually of like all the sleepless nights I had of what if this, what if this, like, watch me get pregnant and then run off and have an affair because I'm mad. Like, you know, just, you know, watch me get pregnant and be happy, you know, and be totally like, think this is the best thing ever. Like, watch me refuse and have my whole life fall apart. And so, so I feel like in many ways, like Rose grew from that dilemma in my own life. And then, you know, she also grew out of all the different fantasies that I had. And like, if only I could have lived all those out in real life to see how they went, but you know, we only get one right. life. So yeah. So it's very personal to me, but also Rose's story is, you know, is fiction because I didn't get to live all those lives. Very sad.
Yeah, maybe. If only we were cats. I mean, but we're not. But I do love how you explore all these different paths that she could take just from this one moment. It's incredibly powerful. And it's really just, you know, like the born from this idea that this woman knows she does not want to have children. And, you know, you wrote a really eloquent piece about this recently, about your own decision not to have kids, and that you were very clear on this from the start. I like how you describe it too in this piece. It's like, I don't like this food, or like, I'm not attracted to this person. I don't want to have kids. Mm. I would love to hear about how you were treated because of this. And maybe if you've heard from other people, kind of how women are women who do not want to have children are treated, and how it impacts you emotionally and impacts how you are able to live your life.
I mean, I think they titled that piece like, why is it such a big deal for, you know, women to not want children? That was the piece I think you're referring to from the Times of London.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, I've actually been interviewing women. I decided to start interviewing women who don't want children. I don't know why I haven't done this before. I mean, I do national studies about stuff. And I kind of can't believe it took me this long to like think of that as research I might want to do. But you know, it felt more okay when I was in my 20s and early 30s. Like, I could just be like, yeah, I'm not doing that, and no one really, I mean, people were like, oh, you'll change your mind, but they weren't like angry or like really pushy until I got into my mid 30s. And as like I crept toward, you know, as I got up there in my upper 30s, it's like people around me started to realize like, oh, she's really not going to go through with this. Mm. Like, it's like as my biological clock started like waning, people started getting really like, just pressuring me and talking to me about it and really trying to get me to change my mind in ways that I found incredibly offensive and problematic. And you know, some of the women I've started interviewing for this project are like, they're in their early 30s and they're like, yeah, like, I'm not doing this. Like, I've known since I was 12. Like, I'm like, oh, it's so nice to meet other women who feel that way. Cause I feel like I don't often meet women who feel that, who feel like, oh, I knew this from the beginning. And I'm, you know, a part of me is like, oh, wait until you get older. It's going to get harder. Or maybe this generation is changing, because I do know that the older that I got, the harder it was. And, you know, I think we love to judge women in our culture for anything. You know, you're sort of damned if you do, you're damned if you don't on this issue. If you don't want children, you're judged as selfish and selfish, self-centered. Like, you have all the wrong priorities, like you're going to regret it. These are some of the things that people tell you, like, oh, you're I just actually heard twice in the last week. I'll just say it's one of my pet peeves, actually. So I'm just going to say it. But I heard
say
two writers, I've heard two writers in the last week talk about how they felt like they, you know, they really couldn't have, like, it was really important that they had become a mother to their writing, that it gives you this like window of experience that you never would have had otherwise. And that it was, it made them better writers. Like, I feel like that's something that you hear a lot as a writer, that becoming a mother will make you a better writer. And it's one of those things that I can't help. Maybe that's true, but I also can't help bristling at it. Because it's hard for me not to think, well, what is that? Does that mean my writing life is over because my experience is going to be so limited and narrow? Or, and then I try to come up, well, what is my answer to that? And I'm like, well, maybe people might think the window of experience I'll have access to, like the loneliness and despair, will make me a better writer, and the regret for missing my biological window, perhaps that will make me a better writer. Am I allowed to say those things?
Yes. Yes, you are. And I mean, one, that is just so untrue. I can say this as a writer with kids. I'm not better. If anything, it makes me worse. But it's just the amount of nonsense that you have had to, that you as an individual, and I think any woman who makes this choice has to endure, is mind-boggling. And it's so, it's such a, it comes out of all our mouths. I'm sure I've done it too, that you don't even think about it. It's such a natural part of societal conversation to inquire about when people are having kids, if they want kids, why they don't want kids. I mean, I think about like the narrative around Jennifer Aniston for the last 30 years and about how she never had kids and she's lonely and sad. And it's like, or she's living her best life. How does one who doesn't want to have kids, like, how do you put up with it? And how do you shut people up? Because the stuff that is put upon you feels, or to me as an observer, endless.
I mean, you know, since I've really just closed the door on this issue, and since I've gotten older, getting up there, they put the wrong age, by the way, in the Times of London. It's like the first thing, it's like right under my picture, they put my age. And I'm like, come on, Times of London. And also, you got it wrong. They put me as older than I am. But anyway, whatever. I love how like, they put my age. It's like Donna Freitas, 49, and does it without children. I'm not 49. But anyway, it's like, they have, I don't know, there's something about England and the UK. They always want to know women's ages, which I think is ridiculous. But
well, that's like kind of part of the whole conversation, right? Like,
well, then they get it wrong.
they needed to know that I was well beyond my biological clock here. I think they wanted to make that point. God. They wanted to be like, it's over for her. She hasn't had kids. Anyway, so if anyone was wondering, but, I think it's gotten easier the older I've gotten, because people realize that ship has sailed. Like, it's not happening. Mm. And so they, you know, I think they're like, all right, well, like, we tried, and she's just going to grow into an old maid. So, you know, I'm going to be like Mrs. Bates eventually, and, you know, in Pride and Prejudice, everyone will be sad for my loneliness. I'm being sarcastic. But I mean, I think my friends are very supportive. And I think for me, just, I feel so certain about my decision. Like, I feel really glad that this is the choice that I made. I don't have any regrets. Like, I used to have so many fears, which, you know, Rose, my character Rose, was really born of a lot of the fears that I had about, what if I do regret it? What if I find out, like, on the other side of this, that I should have had a baby and that I didn't? What will my life be? And, you know, I'm on the other side of that question, and I really love my life. And I think that that's the biggest, for me, that's the biggest reply to those critics. And one of the things, you know, because I'm on the other side of this decision, I had felt like the cacophony around me had really gone quiet. And then since Rose came out a couple of months ago, I can't tell you how many women have written me about, you know, over Instagram and to my email, just about how this is the first time they felt seen in a novel. And I was like, wow. And I had this young woman recently, I drove her home from a wedding randomly, and I had just met her that day and I drove her back to Brooklyn, and in a car, she told me she didn't want children. Just randomly. She had no idea that I'd written a book about, you know, about a woman who didn't want children. And then she launched into this, before I could say anything, she launched into this whole like reasoning of like anticipating all my responses to her about how like she knows that she might change her mind. Like she went through this whole list. And then I was like, stop. I was like, here's the deal. I was like, stop wasting your mental energy on trying to justify your decision. If you know this about yourself, then just accept it and embrace it and celebrate it. And I was like, because you can be a happy and fulfilled woman, I promise you, like without kids. And she looked at me and she was like, no one has ever said that to me before. And then she said, where are the rest of you? And I spent like the next, I can't stop thinking about the fact that, like I realized that no one has ever said that to me. Like you can be a happy and fulfilled person without children. Like I've said it to myself. And also, where are the rest of us? Like that's part of why I started like talking about it online. So I didn't really plan to actually be so open about not having children, but I've realized how important it is to other women to see women who don't have them. That was a very long answer. I'm sorry.
No, it's fantastic.
It makes me wonder how women who do have children can be allies, you know, in this effort. Do you have thoughts on that?
That's such a nice thought. I mean, that's a really great question. I mean, I think, you know, I've said to a few of my friends, like since I had a conversation with this young woman who ended up in my car, who wrote me after, like she wrote, I told her before she got out of the car, like I gave her this big hug. We were both vaccinated. I gave her this big hug. And I was like, I will have lunch with you or coffee or drink anytime you want. If you need to like revisit this conversation, I was like, okay, I'll be the woman without children. Like I'll be going into like ahead of you and like letting you know how this is going. And so she wrote me the next day and thanked me for saying that. And I was like, wow, okay, this was really meaningful to her. And it was really meaningful to me. And I've said to a bunch of my friends, like this issue about like, no one, like not even you all have said to me, like Donna Freitas, like sat me down and like put their hands on my shoulder and looked me in the eyes and said, you know, it's okay. You don't want children. You can still be happy and fulfilled. And just really, I think said it like they mean it. And it's not that I feel like my friends haven't believed that, but I don't know that anyone realized I needed to hear it. And I really needed to hear it, like when I was in my 30s, especially. And I believe it myself now because I think because I just feel confident in my life. But I think it would be really helpful if women could support that choice in general, like as a choice, but also as like a worthwhile like life decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a question we get a lot from listeners is like, how do I know? Like, I don't know if I want kids. What do I do? You know, I'm this age, and we have the kind of challenging aspect of our bodies to go along with this decision. Like there is this kind of feeling of time always running out. And I think about as a parent, I think about like ways to answer that a lot, because I personally believe that you you can be happy and fulfilled and experience like maternal instinct in so many ways that don't involve having your own children. And it's interesting seeing Rose kind of grapple with this too in the lives that I've experienced so far in the book. But yeah, I think that conversation had by all people is so, so important, not just people who are childless by choice, but, people who aren't, because it is freaking like, you know, I don't know, having kids and not being sure about having kids is a really like, that's a challenging position to be in as well.
Well, I think all the lives, right? Like all the different choices that we make, whether we have kids or we don't, whether we're married or not, whether we get divorced, like, oh, that's a whole other conversation, divorce. But, you know, I think they're all complicated choices. And I think it gets hard when you don't have a model for what you're doing. And I think this is sort of the issue, is I don't really know if anyone around me like truly believes me, like, or truly believes that a woman cannot have children and live a happy life. That is the thing. It's like, because I also, I don't know where those older women are who can like confirm that for me. And it's almost like having faith in God or something. Like, you're like going forward and you're going into the unseen, and you, you're hoping that you made the right decision. And, you know, but you don't necessarily have all of these women you can point out and be like, look at her, she has done it this way, or look at her. Because most of the, like, we talk about motherhood all the time, but we don't talk about women who make this other choice. And so, you know, I don't really know, like, I don't have any friends who have chosen not to have children the way that I do. I have two friends who don't have children, who still maybe have time to, who will if they can. And I think we'll probably try to have children in other ways, no matter what. So, but I don't know anyone else like me, like in my friend group, even though I live in Brooklyn. And I think there are probably a lot of women in Brooklyn that don't have children. And so it's kind of like, I don't know, like, I wonder if people really believe me, or if they doubt when I say that I do feel happy now. Cause, you know, we like to doubt everything women say too. So
we had Glynis McNichol on the podcast a couple years ago, and she wrote a book called No One Tells You This, about her choice to not have children and also being single in her 40s. And she kind of said the same thing, like, I'm really happy. But it's hard to convince people that I am happy, which just, I think, just says so much about, you know, these societal expectations that we put on women, and these expectations that I think so many women have internalized, right? Like, that's what I find especially challenging sometimes.
Well, I think one of the things that people talk about is how you've never known love until you look in the eyes of your baby. And, you know, like, people say that to you. Like, people say that.
No, I know. I know. It's
maybe
so,
it's true.
It drives me crazy, but yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it might be true. But then that would also mean that I will never know that kind of love. And I guess that's the implication when people say that to you, is that if you don't do this, you will never know love like this. And so I guess that's the choice that I made. But it always feels really, it's hard to hear things like that, or like the one I said before about, you know, motherhood made me into a better writer, or mother, you know, it's so important that I became a mother to my writing. And, you know, I think that any avenue of our experience, whether it's becoming a mother or perhaps not becoming a mother, or, you know, grief, so loss or divorce, or like, you know, every powerful and life-changing experience that we have really adds to who we are as people, as humans, but also as, you know, in the art that we create, if we're artists. So like if you're a writer or a painter or whatever. And, but I mean, just because I think like divorce opened up an avenue in my own writing, but that doesn't mean that I would advocate it for everyone. You'd become a better writer if only you get divorced.
Let's tell my husband that and see what he thinks.
But I mean, it's sort of like akin to, you know, like, you know, you would become a better writer if you became a mother. And okay, well, you should become divorced and then let's see how it goes.
Yeah, your writing will be great. It's just like this whole element of gaslighting too, that it's comes along, kind of a cultural gaslighting. I mean, like in the book, I feel like Luke, Rose's husband, who, speaking of divorce, there is that part of one of her lives. He's almost, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like he's gaslighting her through a lot of these experiences. And it's in their conversations of kind of like, but I said I didn't, but maybe, but this, but that. And I wonder if that's kind of like a larger cultural experience too, for people who make the choice not to have kids, is there's, like you're saying, you're kind of gaslit into being, to questioning your choices and your wants and your desires as an individual.
Well, you know, one of the, I mean, I do think that there is, I was just writing this morning about this topic, and I wrote this line. It's like there's a conspiracy against us. It's like people are conspiring to make sure that women like me don't exist. So I think there's a kind of attempt at erasure, right? Like you have decided you're not going to accept that a woman can be a woman and not do this thing. And so you do everything you can to change her mind. And, you know, even like I wrote in the Times article about how like even my doctor at one point like was really like insistent that I was like I had to take these like pills and whatever because I would probably end up having a baby. And I was like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not going to take these vitamins. Like, I'm not that, you know, the vitamins in the book. But anyway, I was like, just stop telling me I need to take premedal vitamins because I'm not going to do this. And so, but I think one of the things, I know one of the things that it created in me was this sense of fear or just madness. Like, you know, what if I don't do this? Like, it created a panic in me because I felt really certain, like really certain to my core that I did not want to do this thing. And what I was being told all the time as I got older was I was going to regret insisting that I didn't want to do this and that it was, you know, all these things were going to happen if I didn't change my mind. And so I think it felt like there was this effort to make sure that I didn't follow through by the time I was getting up into my late 30s. And it was really panic inducing and frustrating and maddening and enraging. But going back to Luke, you know, I think one of the things that one of the things a lot of people have said who've read the book is that they've actually never read a male character, like a husband character that is the one who's insisting on the children, that they feel like the archetype is, it's never the man who changes his mind. It's always the woman who forces the issue. They thought it was really interesting that the roles, they called it like the roles were reversed. I've heard that a lot. And I did think a lot though about, like one of the things that happens when I write my novels is I feel like the first draft is like the draft that I needed to get out of me. You know, it's like the one that was like, you know, like all the cathartic draft. And I was very angry at Luke in the first draft of the book. And so then I had to work really hard on Luke in subsequent drafts because I had to make him better. But one of the things that was good about that was that I spent a lot of time, you know, thinking about, well, like, why is it isn't like, it isn't really that terrible that a man changes his mind. I mean, like, there's a way in which how can you really know in your 20s that, like, this huge deal, like, maybe some people don't, like, I think, I don't know that, like, it's codified by the time you're 28. Like, maybe for some of us, it is, we know what we want with regard to children, but maybe we don't. Maybe at 28, we're like traveling and doing other things and we can't even imagine it. But at 35, it's all we can think about. And, you know, I think in some ways, it's really frustrating that this, that he changes his mind. And it feels really unfair to Rose. But also, it's really tragic, because I think that happens. Like, I think people do change their mind about this thing. I don't think that there's a way that you can create a fail safe in a marriage that this one thing about me is never going to change. I mean, that's what marriage is, right? I don't know if both of you are married or not, but like, I feel like part of what happens in marriage and part of what makes it hard to ride out a marriage over the course of a life is that major things can change you that you didn't anticipate. And some of those can be tragic because they can end up ending your relationship. And so, you know, I mean, and we're humans, right? So like, it's hard. I think it's hard to hold someone to one particular lifestyle or choice for their entire lives. Like, if it's really hard, you know, being married is really hard. Staying married is really hard. And that's one of those deal breaker things. The kids thing is really like, it's, you're either going to do it or you're not.
Yeah.
And if one person decides, like, this is what I have to have in order to live a happy life, then, and the other person doesn't want to, then, you know, it's a rough situation. So I guess I'm trying to advocate that Luke is not a total villain, that, like, we should have sympathy for him too.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Let's take a break and then we will be back in a flash.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
All right, we are back as promised.
Just to switch gears a little bit, you mentioned that you have social media self-care practices, and you wrote a whole book called The Happiness Effect on how social media is driving a generation to appear perfect at any cost. And I know it was based on work you did with some of your college students, but I definitely feel like that applies to myself as a 42-year-old person. So I would love to hear what boundaries you set with social media in order to maintain self-care with it.
Well, it was funny I did that research. I did it because my own students and so many students that I talk to when I like travel around to talk about my research were asking questions about social media. And then I finally thought, okay, I'm gonna do this research because my students want to know. But I don't have a smartphone. I've never had a smartphone ever. So I have a dumb phone and this is one of the things I've really put my foot down on. I do everything on my laptop. I have, you know, a little sad, it's like actually the phone I have is like the one that you get for like your grandmother with the big buttons, because that's all that you can find now, really. So you know, like my friends know that once I'm out of the house, you know, they can call me on my phone or they can text me, but they know not to text me a lot because I have like T9. Do you remember T9? T9 is like,
yes.
Yeah, I have T9 on my phone. That's how I text. So I'm not a long texter.
Wow.
So mostly people communicate with me over email and rarely, like if I'm going to be late, I'll be like, I'm going to be late. I text that out, you know, on my phone. But so that's one of the boundaries that I have set in my life, because I feel really committed to, like, when I go out of the house, you know, I'm out of the house. Like, I'm not working. I'm not checking emails. I'm just in the world and I'm looking at people. Actually, I mentor young writers, and one of my mentees from last year who I've stayed in touch with, we've been taking walks. I'll walk into the city and we'll take a walk during the pandemic but anyway, I had to go return something at the store at Zara. And so I went in, she came with me. So I went to go do my return and there was like a line to the register. And she was like, do you mind if I look at stuff? And I was like, no. And so she was going around looking, and then she came up to me horrified and she's like, oh my gosh, I forgot you don't have a smartphone. I can't believe I left you alone. And I was like, what? And I was like, no. And she was like, but what do you do? And because everyone else in the line was like on their phone, and I was just like, like looking around. And I was like, I don't know. I just think and I look around at people. And she was like, really? I was like, yeah. And she was like, you just look around. And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, I've been doing this for years. Don't worry. Like, I'm not going to fall apart if I have to like stand in line without a phone. But yeah, so I don't have a phone. And then I just started my first social media account this year on Instagram. And that has been an adventure. And yeah.
I think it's amazing that you have resisted. I mean, talk about like the peer pressure, like about having kids. I feel like there's also the peer pressure, this constant pressure of like to be on social media, to be relevant, to be this, to be that, and to resist it. It gets harder and harder. I mean, I'm, you know, I have to go on like little periods where I take breaks, and it's hard to be off, especially the more you need it for your work. It's really freaking tough.
Yeah, I'm just realizing I'm really obstinate, aren't I? I didn't have kids. I don't have a smartphone.
Yes, I think you know yourself.
Yeah.
So, oh, well, that's a nice really way of looking at it.
That.
I didn't like, you know, there was a turning point. I think it was in 2011 or maybe it was 2012, where I had had a dumb phone for like 9 years and it just never died. And so I was like, well, it still works. So why would I get another phone? And everyone around me by then, most people had smartphones by then. And then I had a book come out. I think it was 2012. I had a book come out and my publicist was like, you need a smartphone. Like you have to be available immediately. And so like there was, and that, I feel like that was the summer because that book came out, people were suddenly insisting I needed a smartphone. And I was like, wait a minute. And I think that was when I was like, no, I'm not getting one. Like that was sort of like before I hadn't really decided. It was just, I was like, no, I don't need one. I don't need one. And then there was this moment where I was like, oh no, I don't want one actually. And then this seems to be like the hill I'm willing to die on. but I feel like, so as someone with very little willpower I'm going to rephrase that. Because maybe my willpower is I don't have a cell phone. I don't have a smartphone, but I don't really feel like everyone will tell you if you get a smartphone, you can put the settings on it so that you can't check email or you can't do this. And I'm like, that's just crazy. Because this is like the people who, that's like the same thing when people tell you, you can just turn off the airport on your laptop. And I'm like, yeah, and then you can just turn it back on in 2 seconds. And one of the things I do in the morning before I write is, well, except in the pandemic, because now my husband's working from home and he doesn't allow this, so I had to get freedom and so I can block my internet. But before, for years, all I did was I like unplugged the internet from the wall and it was just off. Because like I had, like I need like barriers. I need like an obstacle course between me and the internet. So that I don't use it. Cause otherwise I like look at Zillow and I look at houses and I go and like I do online shopping and I read articles online. And so I don't, or I check my email and I don't do my writing. And so I really need those boundaries or I don't like, I can't resist. And so I guess this is one of those boundaries I've chosen to have. Like, I don't want to be in line at Zara returning something and checking my email. Like, I want to be looking around and, you know, just hanging out or just thinking.
Well, Donna, I feel like we could talk to you forever. this has been amazing. We should shout out your Instagram. It's Donna Freitas. Donna Freitas dot writer. So, you know, follow Donna on Instagram in a supportive boundary set way. But Donna, where else can our listeners find out more about you?
I have a website. It's just DonnaFreitas.com. You can email me because I'm old school and I love emails. So I'm Donna Marie Freitas. Donna Marie Freitas at gmail.com. And I'm really good at answering my emails. So, I love it when people reach out to me there. But I have really enjoyed readers connecting on Instagram. It's been this unexpected, fun, supportive thing with my book out. Yeah. It's kind of nice to know who's reading your book. And I just have to learn, kind of like with anything, I have to learn how to control my usage of it.
And just to remind our listeners, your new book is The Nine Lives of Rose Napolitano, and it's really great. Donna, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank
you. This was so great.
Thank you for having me. This has been so fun.
All right. Well, Dori, I really enjoyed our conversation with Donna.
Me too.
It was real. And I ripped through that book. It was really, really interesting and well done. And I definitely recommend it if anyone wants a engaging read. I just thought her book was great, but she was so fun to talk to.
She was great. Really, really like talking to her. Okay.
Well, here we go. We've got the intentions.
We do.
I intended last week to journal and to journal in like a vulnerable way, not in a like way in which I'm like grading my my writing and worrying about what people might think if they read it. And I did that a couple times.
And?
I don't know if it feels good, but I did it.
Okay, all right.
I did it. And then I wrote down some of the feelings that have been with me since I was, 9 years old. And that was interesting, but it also felt good. It did feel good. I'm not going to lie. So I'm going to keep trying to work on it. And this week I have an intention that kind of comes from a, conversation that we've had with a listener, or rather like an email that we received from a listener, which is that I'm eager to experience petrichor. Petrichor, Dory. Quote, a pleasant smell that frequently accompanies the first rain after a long period of warm, dry weather. Mm. Petrichor.
Now, has there been... Because when I was in Massachusetts and Connecticut, it was raining all the time. Has it stopped raining?
We had a massive thunderstorm a couple nights ago. And then for like the past 48 hours, it has not rained. But my children were listening to the radio because they love like pop hits. And normally they listen to like Spotify, but here we're just listening to like an FM radio. And one of those like weather alerts came on, where it's like long beep. And then it's like,
yes.
And they were like, what is happening? And it was a thunderstorm warning for the county that we're in. So I'm thinking we're going to get more and I can have some petrichor moments. So that's my plan. My plan is petrichor.
Cool. That sounds fun.
How about you? Talk to me about the intentions.
Okay. So I was intending to get back into a real life rhythm and instead I fell into a rut. So I would say my intention from last week was not fulfilled. And this week I'm just trying to like navigate either out of the rut or within the rut. Just trying to figure it out. Okay. That's all I can say.
I love that you just called it rut navigation in our notes.
Well, I mean, that's what it is.
I know. And there's like really like having you mentioned the sensation of being in a rut. Now I just can't even understand how you get out of one. Like it's really hard.
I know.
So you just put on that GPS, that rut GPS, and you just take whatever route feels the best.
Like it might be a roundabout route because there might be traffic on the most direct route.
Yeah, you might end up going through some rotaries.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this brings us to the end. And as usual, we love to tell you that this show, Forever 35, is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Sam Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast.
Indeed.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.